newspaper men meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where we talk about ethical decision-making in the newsroom and we talk about the challenges confronting journalists today with some veteran journalists from New York's capital region. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now publishing The Upstate American. Thank you, Substack. And I'm here with Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette. You doing all right?
I am fine. Once again, we have a long list of topics we need to address. I thought eventually this would dry up and we'd go off the air, but apparently not.
30 years and counting. Here we are still with the Media Project. What do you know? To which we are grateful our producer, David Gustina. David, sir.
Yes, me and many years of compliance under this regime of Rex Smith.
Oh, yeah, the powerful host of the Media Project. Yeah, no, David, of course, being the morning edition host here on WAMC, et cetera, and does this program and occasionally steps in front of the microphone.
Yeah, I'm the fill in the bench, you know, when we've exhausted all other options. And of course, it's summertime, so a lot of people are not available.
David, you're much more valuable than being a bench.
Spread the word.
Okay, absolutely. Anyway, we thank you for joining us to talk about what's going on in the media. And there's a huge story, of course, that being an effort by the Justice Department to compel the grand jury testimony of some New York Times reporters. And we alluded last week in our program to the reporting that led to this. That is, to the reporting that there were security concerns about President Trump's new Air Force One jet that prompted the president not to take the jet at the Secret Service's insistence when he flew out of the NATO summit. And then, of course, what happened is the Justice Department knocked on the door of five New York Times reporters saying, we compel you to appear before a grand jury. And now the Times is trying to quash those subpoenas. And the question is, where do the rights of journalists to protect their sources and the right of the government to protect its secrets begin? Because here we are, doesn't the government have a right to say we hold these things to be secret and we need to know who's leaking it for national security purposes? Judy?
The problem is, if government had its way, everything would be a secret. And our job in the journalism trade is to reveal those secrets. In this case, clearly, the information was obvious to anybody who looked at the planes. They had different kinds of equipment on it. And did it put the president in danger? No. And that's one of the things that we often talk about when we have stories that people in positions of power will approach us and say, hey, you shouldn't print this, you shouldn't publish this because it could endanger national safety. And we listen to those concerns and make a decision. Oftentimes, we don't run the information. But in this case, clearly, this was not important information to be withheld from the public. The president was lying about it. And this is just a result of the president being embarrassed that his fancy new jet didn't live up to specs, just like most people in the press warned about for months ahead of time.
Deflection, distraction. It is the president of the United States who's already under criticism for taking the jet to begin with from Qatar or Qatar or however we say it these days. But the point being, this is a bully tactic. One more bully tactic to try to rein the press in. He calls the losing New York Times. He attacks Maggie Haberman over and over again, calling her maggot Haberman. The behavior in and of itself should be truth enough that he's off the rails when he wants to go after the press for some perceived embarrassment of his own creation.
But let's get this straight. I remember many times over these years of running a newsroom when someone would say to me, why do you guys think you have special privileges? Who elected you to make these decisions? The fact is, we don't have necessarily a specific constitutional right to withhold the names of sources, and not in federal court anyway. There are state shield laws that protect in some state instances. In most states, there are laws that protect the rights of journalists to withhold their sources, but not federally. And that has been clarified since actually a 1972 Supreme Court decision, Brandsburg v. Hayes, that we don't have that right, but it was fudged enough in that decision that generations now of officials have not pushed journalists very often to divulge their sources. Sometimes it has happened. Judith Miller spent, I think, 80 days in jail for the New York Times withholding sources when she was covering national security for the New York Times. And so this has happened, but now here we have a situation where the government is saying we need to know who those sources are. And I think the Times is probably going to win on quashing the subpoenas because of some legitimate constitutional concerns that this is an attempt to limit the press because of the point you made that the president is clearly trying to stop the reporting, not necessarily just trying to find who the sources are.
The argument lawyers will make on behalf of the press is that if the information can be ascertained some other way, you don't need to talk to the reporters about this. But Rex, what do you tell people who say the government should have its secrets, that we should be protecting national security? How do you respond to that? Because the average person, they don't understand where we're coming from in this situation.
I say you're right. The government does legitimately have some secrets, and that's why legitimate good news organizations will not divulge troop movements, for example. There are secrets that we know, that we maintain. Even on a lesser level, we know when police departments are moving on drug raids. We don't divulge that in advance. But that is a journalistic judgment, not a government judgment. There's a difference between prior restraint by government and thoughtful restraint by editors and producers. And when you use the machinery of a grand jury to squelch investigative reporting, what you're doing is you're prioritizing the government's ability to conceal its mistakes over the value of the public's right to know. So that favors government power over citizen power. And that's what we really can't tolerate, right?
We just celebrated 250 years of this country, and those founding fathers wrote a document, the Declaration of Independence, that was about the people being in charge. And if the press is the representative of the people, then they have a right to virtually almost everything, except for some of these exceptions that you noted, Rex, because being responsible would mean you wouldn't give up true movements. However, this is from the bottom up, not from the top down, when it comes to journalism. And if we're to control our destinies as Americans, we need to have that power of the press to hold the government to tell the truth, because they'll often lie.
And here's a practical question. If that Qatar jet does not meet the security needs of the president of the United States, why was he on it? And why was he allowed to be on it? Those are real questions, and the public has a right to ask them.
Not to mention just accepting the jet. Yeah. From another country and the potential conflicts of interest with that.
Oh, boy. So we will have to see how this turns out, of course. We don't know whether the court will, in fact, quash the subpoenas. We don't know what will happen. Certainly, we know that the reporters are not going to divulge their sources. We've had situations here in local journalism where we have said to reporters, pack your toothbrush. If you're going to go to court, they might compel you. They might try to get you to divulge a source. And if you're not going to do that, you're going to have to be prepared to go into a jail cell. We've never had a court here, in my experience, who's ordered a reporter to release a source. But it could happen.
I'm going to throw you a softball here, Rex Smith, because you talk about this all the time. And the importance of a journalism organization like the New York Times and having the money to fight things like this. And that is a real issue, isn't it?
It's absolutely it, because you could have, and you probably will have, local officials mimicking the actions of the president and trying to compel a local newspaper to say, who told you that about the police chief, and locking them up. And that's why you hope that there are public interest law firms who will represent journalists in those situations, as news organizations don't have the resources to fight it. There's another issue where a former Fox News reporter, Catherine Herridge, who then went to work for CBS News, is being compelled to pay $800 a day until she reveals a confidential source. Now, I don't know.
And no one can give her the money.
Yeah. Who?
She's banned from taking money.
Yeah.
From even a GoFundMe.
Yeah. And the problem is she doesn't work for any of those news organizations anymore. Full disclosure, I've known Catherine for many years, and she is not actually independently wealthy. So
Sure.
having $800 a day until she reveals a confidential source is kind of a big deal. But she's an independent journalist who is now being forced to pay because she will not reveal the source who gave her what may have been not a very good story, may have been a bad source, but that is not a reason for the journalist to have to be fined for protecting the source, given our constitutional system.
You can only imagine this is just going to continue and continue in this country with a president who is completely opposed to a legitimate press, labeling people fake news all the time, including Maggie Haberman and on this story, and said 90% of it is fake news. And you keep repeating these things over and over again. And then you add in the AI and the multiplicity of channels where you can get news from influencers and elsewhere. And we've got gobbledygook.
Speaking of AI, David, thank you very much, because we got a piece of mail from a longtime Capital District resident is how she signed it.
Wait, we have listeners?
We do indeed. We're very grateful when listeners write to us. Thank you, Jean Allen. She writes, I wish you could spend more time on the dangers of relying on AI. I discovered early on that summarizing messages posted on email reservations or booking were often wrong, so I ignore them. But this is posts that she has seen where there are errors in the AI reports that she's getting on news. And she says, I'm appalled and concerned that supposedly respectable companies will slap anything into their corporate name, and companies who I rely on for correct times for appointments and so on will get it wrong. Oh, and she says, you're a highlight of my week.
What?
And the show should be an hour.
Why?
Thank you, Jill. Now, you're a highlight of our week as well. How about that? But what do you do if your news source is giving you bad information via AI? Get a different source, right?
And as Google searches apparently are way down because of AI. They are generating the content you need, even if it's very bad content, and they don't give you a choice. I would say 75% of the time, any AI summary of anything has errors built into it. That's why you need a person to actually do these kind of AI summaries. It should be the first draft, and then have a real person go in. Yeah, it's slop. It continues to be slop, despite the conventional wisdom nowadays is that AI is great. It's going to make our lives so much easier. And in some ways, it will. But when it comes to summarizing, please stop summarizing the emails people send me. I hate it.
Yeah.
And will you please stop summarizing my search? Will you please stop I don't want to be summarized. I want to actually read the story.
Absolutely. And we know that we need to rely upon that. By the way, one of the things that you just mentioned, the fact that search is down, as opposed to because AI is giving the results of search. One of the things that has channeled revenue to a lot of news organizations is something called programmatic advertising, which is automatically generated ads. It's this really lousy advertising, but it is instantaneously bid upon. This is all done electronically within instance, and ads can be generated to go alongside content that is created by legitimate news organizations. And this programmatic advertising has become something that is, I think of it as being like the crack cocaine of the advertising industry, because it's automatic. You don't actually have to sell it. Great. There is a big bidding process that channels this advertising onto hundreds of thousands of sites, including legitimate news sites.
Who's doing the bidding? I don't get it.
It's electronic. It's all electronic. And these news organizations basically are looking for money to come in. And if you hit a certain threshold, then the ad goes onto your site instantly.
For example, you do a search on what the water temperature in Lake George is, you will see a bunch of boat ads creep alongside the story. It's creepy,
I agree,
and it's annoying. And it has been in vogue with the advertising industry for 5 or 6 years, but it's going to come crashing down.
And it is, in fact, now crashing down because AI is reducing the use of Google search, as you say. You're not getting specific search results as much as AI. And so suddenly the news organizations that depend upon programmatic advertising now have less of it, and it's going to actually put even more financial pressure on news organizations who are not going to have as much digital ad revenue as they used to have. So more good news for journalism, folks.
The other side of this AI thing, and I think, Judy, you guys make such great points. We really do need people to be doing journalism, not AI. But at the same time, you see where, for example, an article we sent around this week, organizations such as Big Local News at Stanford and UC Berkeley have used AI-assisted methods to uncover 1.5 million previously inaccessible police records,
wow,
leading to more than 100 investigations. So there's the competing reality that as a tool, it could really help us. But if we're not clear how we're using AI, what is generated by AI, we risk this AI slop situation that Judy's talking about, and the fact that it's getting harder and harder for people to trust what they're reading and listening and watching.
Absolutely. And so that's why a number of news organizations, including the New York Times, are suing the generators of AI, accusing AI companies of, and the Times lawsuit says, a brazen theft of intellectual property at an unprecedented scale.
And they did. They fed all this information that's been, for example, in the New York Times. And do they have a proprietary right to it?
But didn't the New York Times reach some sort of licensing agreement,
yes,
with at least one engine? And a big company like that can do that. The smaller companies are less likely to be crawled, although I think they're not being crawled as much as the higher national level. If you do a search for something in Niskayuna or Loudonville or Schenectady, you're not going to get the local news. You'll get nothing.
And speaking of what our listeners are offering, Hilde in Stanisfield writes to us and says, "Dear..." Ah, I love the salutation. "Dear Rex Smith and team." Hi,
oh,
team.
Oh, man.
You know what?
The baseball metaphor today.
I tell you, it's great. Thank you. First of all, my husband and I love your program. One of the best things on the radio. Thank you. But she's writing about what we said last week about the New York Times doing more of their stories as videos. We pointed out that there's someone who's been hired to do video training, that is increasingly a part of their repertoire. And she points out, as a longtime subscriber, now digitally primarily, that she isn't using it. "I rarely have time for more than one or two of these videos. True, there's some pieces that only work with animation and other effects. A.O. Scott on poetry, that was wonderful. Or The Odyssey, for example. But generally, once I know the voices of the columnists enough to hear them in my mind, a transcript seems like an option that is better." Yeah, but I think the thing is, my guess is that I'm speaking to someone who is about of my generation, and I think that audio...
Before electricity.
Yeah. Audio is probably the great medium for millennials and Gen Z and beyond, right?
Well, listen, I'm still alive.
Judy is an audio
You are
consumer.
Vibrant, Judy. Vibrant.
And I'm with her. Since last week, I spent a lot of time taking of videos, especially those at the New York Times. And I can tell you, it does take time. I rather read. I'm a faster reader. Maybe the younger people nowadays don't read as much. The other thing is, sure, the New York Times can produce a video of Matt Damon and Tom Holland making pizza. That's enjoyable to watch. Not exactly newsworthy, but I know they're promoting a movie. And I will say that they have really good production values. And again, they have Matt Damon and Tom Holland. Most news organizations will not have access to that talent, that star power, to generate a video that will get massive amounts of viewership.
You don't think people watching David Gustina making pizza? I mean, it's an Italian name,
that.
You know.
Yeah.
Hey, Gustina, buongiorno.
We love your messages. media@wamc.org. One of the big... Wait.
Before you go anywhere, Rex.
Wait.
We should mention that part of what's happening here at this radio network, WAMC, and this program is we are moving in that direction.
Ah.
You could be seeing us at some point here as we're building a studio to do YouTube-style videos.
Woo-hoo.
So you can do that. I think that part of this is there's now an expectation.
Yeah.
That there's going to be every opportunity to see it in any way you like, whether it's in read it in text, whether you see it as a video or you listen to it. Everyone's expecting that visual channel to come along with everything. And so that's part of the reason to do it. But I think Judy makes such a great point that drives me crazy, is that it's ultimately used, that video to clip a smaller video for someone to watch. And oftentimes, like some of our more recent posts to social media with our promos, it's fun and funny. And so that's how you're trying to get people. But we're losing news in the process.
Uh-huh. Because entertainment supplants the time that people would otherwise spend consuming news. Yeah, interesting. That's something for us to guard against as we put this program forward. Now, it's going to be a matter of weeks, I presume, before we get the video. We'll do this when we can.
But, it's coming. Just be aware.
Wahoo. All right. I'm going to have to dress a little better.
I know. Me too. And do we need facelifts? What do you think?
Oh, God.
Well, just use AI.
Great idea. There is a good use for AI.
The world is so changing. When I was in my 30s, I was working for a big newsroom downstate where we launched a nightly newscast. So I was on the air every night from a set in the middle of the newsroom. And I've got to tell you, the culture clash. The first time that I was in the men's room just off the newsroom applying makeup to my face. And this grizzled old cops reporter, Tom Domoretsky, walked in and said, "Oh, my God," with disgust. It was quite a shocking thing. And the Night City editor stood up in the middle of the newsroom, as she often would, and clanged a big cowbell and said, "Chinese food, run!" Clang, 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 clang. We're on the set doing a serious newscast. The culture clash of video and audio and text, it's a real thing.
And wars. I think a lot of that is fading now because we all need each other and are partnering in many ways. But Rex Smith, let me be the old guy. Let me tell you something, Rex Smith. You came out of that television experience. You went up to Albany as editor of the Albany Times Union, and you looked your nose down at the TV stations and the radio stations. Why do you think this program was created?
This is David's Alan.
That was my Alan impression, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's true. There has been in the print press a little bit of a superiority complex about the fact that a lot of times in television and radio news, you could hear them reading the papers of the Times Union when they're doing the news, because you have more people, you have more in-depth reports, you get to more places, you get more stories. But that's just a function of being a newspaper, and we have less time in broadcasting, and yet, and I hear you laughing, Judy.
I'm hearing resentment. No.
It's just an acknowledgement that while Rex had to put makeup on, was made fun of, he also had some of the same biases towards the broadcast journalism field.
What can you do? But it's happening everywhere. It's happening here. The Economist, one of the most sophisticated magazines for news in the country, is working to get more reporters on the air. 90 short-form videos in the past year out of The Economist. Fortune is debuting a daily show called Fortune Daily this month, a 20-minute show. So it is happening all over.
NPR is doing it.
Absolutely, yeah. And the key is that people are getting information not from the cable sources and so on, but actually increasingly from news-focused creators. 46% of people around the world get news from influencers and creators. That's the latest news from the Reuters 26 digital news report.
I guess if we can pull some watchers away and get them to listen to more legitimate news, that's a good thing. If the legitimate news operations can become the influencers, I don't know
a good thing
how far that will go, but the idea that people want this video will probably give us all a bump, especially radio stations like this, because I'm sure people want to know what Rex looks like and Judy looks like.
Oh, yeah.
And that, to me, would be interesting to see as we make that transition.
The thing about paywalls, public radio doesn't have this issue, but videos and most of these that we've talked about are not behind paywalls, so you can access them without a subscription.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
So how these media organizations are going to make money with this investment is yet to be determined, because if you don't have a subscription to New York Times and you want to hear what David Sanger has to say about Iran, you can just listen to him and not have to go through the process of paying for a subscription.
One more topic before we leave today.
Right, let's do
and it.
It
is important because it will actually happen before you hear this program, ladies and gentlemen. That is, we tape on Thursday morning and you hear this show after that. Thursday night, as we speak, the President of the United States is scheduled to speak to the nation. But the question is, will the networks interrupt their programming to air it live? Because it apparently is going to be a topic not about the war in Iran, not about inflation, but rather about the 2020 election and his disproven comments, long known to be untrue, about the election loss being
stolen.
So should networks air the president live?
Easy answers. Should they? No. Will they? Yes.
We will see if that's right. You think they shouldn't? Somebody else ought to be deciding what the president, when he is, has a right to speak to the American people?
You know what? We just talked about video. There's plenty of places for people to go and watch this video. I'm sure the White House will put out the video of it. You can go on probably Fox, CBS, and see it anyway. But if you're really trying to educate the American public, I think this is not the way to do it.
What if something happens that's newsworthy? Shouldn't we be there? Do we need to be there because he's the top public official in all the world when he said something? My personal opinion is that if this is about the 2020 election and the idea that it's stolen, it's a lie. And we don't cover lies. We try to cover truth. At the very least, they should be fact-checking it if they're doing anything as it's happening. There are a few ways you could go about this. But this is a real tough one because it's the president of the United States, and we get the slings and arrows from everybody for doing things, whether we do them right or wrong. So if we put that aside, I probably would err on the side of not airing it.
Me too. On the one hand, he's the president. What he says is news. On the other hand, if he's going to make baseless accusations, news outlets have a responsibility to ensure that viewers are not exposed to lies and baseless conspiracy theories. That's all we have time for this week. We'll see how the networks handled it by the time you actually hear this show.
And it should never be an hour, just so that the writer understands.
Thank you to our listeners. Media at WMC.org is how you can write to us. You can hear us anytime at WAMC.org. Judy Patrick and I'm Rex Smith and David Gustina, our producer. Thank you for making all this happen. And thanks to you folks for joining us. We hope to come back again next week for The Media Project.
But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people, when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people, it could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.